My Mac Podcast number 158. I'm Tim Robertson, and it feels like I'm coming back home.
Home to where?
Your house.
Oh, true.
The next generation crying radio. Babies at my
it's
house.
The MyMac.com podcast.
It's like vacation here. Hello, Guy Searle.
Hello, Tim Robertson.
Hello, Chad Perry.
Hello, Tim Robertson.
It is, I don't even know what the date is.
It's December 13th.
It's December 13th.
It's 2007, if that's any help.
And we're doing the MyMac.com podcast. We were talking about Linux. And the story was, what's going to make disgruntled PC users switch either to a Mac or Linux? And my contention is, they'll go to Linux.
Just because.
Because, see, Linux is free. It's free.
How did you say that again?
Free.
Free.
It's free.
It's the people's operating system.
And what happens is everybody contributes. If you use it and you make something, you can let everybody else use what you make for free.
All over the world.
It's like a 1960s commune. And those are still going strong. People still live like that. We make our own food. We dispose of our own waste. Please don't interrupt me.
Sorry.
We make our own soap. We sleep in a big room all together. It's great. We love it. Okay, I'm going to hurt myself if I keep talking like that.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with Linux, just, you know, I've got it on my Mac.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, what do I need it for? I don't know.
God, I think the only time I've ever even attempted to use Linux, it was an older Yellow Dog PowerPC version.
Look at that Yellow Dog over there.
Yeah. I think I was using it back when I had a, I think it was a 300 G3, the, you know, desktop AV unit.
Mm-hmm.
And I could never get the damn thing to work. Ever.
Okay, let's talk about, let's make fun of Guy of screwing up the podcast last week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
okay. So, I was diplomatic doing it at midnight last week all by my lonesome, so now I get to make fun of him.
Well, the first thing I thought when I'd heard about it is like, is this something he tried to record using FubarCaster again?
Yeah. Maybe.
We have a method to our madness, and it doesn't include FubarCaster.
I like that program.
Yeah, just, and it liked you last week too, Guy.
Well, no, come on. It did work very, very well that one week that I sent it to you.
That's true. Yeah. 1 out of 7 ain't bad.
Well, that was really the only time I've actually attempted to use it.
It
thank God the dashboard minute was just that. So,
so
oh, hold on, I've got to do it again.
It's okay. We got a real podcast. The problem is, we're right before the holidays.
Which is right before Macworld Expo.
Right, and there's absolutely nothing really going on. There's been some new programs released, well, at least updated programs, but really nothing new. But you know, browsing the Mac web over the last 7 days or so, you know what I've noticed?
Everything's gone dark. News-wise?
No. What? A lot of games are being released right now, not just from major publishers like EA, but just casual game stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe how many games that I was reading about that actually sounded somewhat interesting, stuff that I might want to check out.
Sure.
Not that I've got time right now, and I don't mean just because of the baby or my game consoles, but I've got Mac games from EA.
Mm-hmm.
That what you just did there, Chad, was like, sorry. You see the spike away.
Yeah.
For instance, I was talking on last week's podcast, which I had to do all by myself, Guy. Need for Speed and using the Xbox controller on the Mac. I tell you what, I was playing it again today, just about 15 minutes or so. I got a couple races in.
That's just what a USB...
A USB controller, yeah, but it's exactly the same controller as on the Xbox 360. And this Colin guy wrote the drivers for it for the Mac, because it's not supported by Microsoft at all.
Right.
But man, it just works perfectly. You know, I could set the buttons to do different things that I would want it to,
mm-hmm.
but I haven't even done that. I've just left them at the default configuration, and I'm very competitive in the game. In fact, I haven't lost a race yet.
Wow.
Not that I'm, you know, at the end of the game or anything yet, but I'm mm-hmm. jamming on it, so I'm quite pleased with, you know, it's not even that he's charging anything for this.
Yeah.
I think that's fantastic.
That's awesome.
And so a lot of people think, going back to what we started with in the show, Linux, that's it's all free. It's a community. It's a community, and it's all free. Well, guess what? We got that on the Mac side.
True.
A lot of people make free stuff for the Mac, or very, very inexpensive shareware stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I hate to say this, is better than anything you're going to find on the Linux side as far as development right. community goes. Because theirs is all free. It's great. But the problem is they're making just simply replacements for commercial programs that you may want to use. Do you like Office? We have a free version. Do you like Photoshop? We have a free version.
It doesn't quite work the same way. No.
And you can't use it in a professional setting, but it's free. look at the avatar I made for my MyChat or MySpace page. I made that in GIMP. Isn't that the name of it, GIMP?
GIMP.
Yeah.
Yeah,
GIMP.
But I think there's also a film GIMP that's...
Do they not realize whoever named this at the beginning, what the hell a GIMP is? didn't somebody... Wait a minute. That's probably not the best name for this program.
For a software, yeah. Especially GIMP. When it's... Yeah.
Is the icon like a black leather mask with a buckle around its neck? Just curious. It would make sense anyways. Mm-hmm. So, no, not a lot's going on. I don't know if David is going to send a fenestration this week. I don't think so. But I know I have a segment from John Nemirovsky.
Really?
Yeah, I have no idea what it is. I haven't listened to it.
Mm.
But, you know, over the last week, I've been kind of busy.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
I said last week that mom and baby are doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. They're both doing well. So nothing new to report there. Guy, anything going on in Geisero world?
Yeah, I've got this great program called UberCat. Oh, never mind. You already knew about that.
Did you get the lotion for the rashy thing? And the burning, it stopped the burning cessation, the penicillin, or is that?
Yeah, I stayed off. I stayed out of mymac.com.
Got to watch. You almost said stayed off of something. Oh, yeah. Well, there's your problem right there. Up at mymac.com, we've got a few reviews going, and we've got Using iWeb 08 Part 6. Six parts to this series, Guy.
Yeah, and there's quite a few more to come, I believe.
Mm, yeah.
At least 2 to 3.
What do you like about iWeb so far the most?
I think the strongest thing about iWeb is its ease of use, that you don't need to know CSS, you don't need to know PHP, you don't need to know HTML, you don't need to know any of that. And you can make a pretty decent looking website, and I'm not even talking about, you know, using all the templates that come with iWeb. You can make it look just as good as almost anything else out there with, you know, a few very obvious notable exceptions. And it's not that hard to do. The only real kind of fly in the ointment is to get the absolute most out of it, you gotta have .Mac.
Do you think .Mac's really worth $100 a year still? Or do you think
Go ahead.
What do you think, the value's gone up since they've added some features to it?
I've had .Mac for a while, and probably for the last couple of years, every single time I would get that little notice in the mail that, you know, we're getting ready to automatically renew your .Mac account, I'd kind of sit there and say, do I really want to do it? Is there anything I'm really using it for? You know, because I
begrudgingly re-upped. That's kind of been me for... Well, see, because I had the iTools before, which was free.
Mm-hmm.
And then I bought .Mac when it first came out. And I've continued with .Mac all these years. But I'm with Guy. Every October when it comes time to renew.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, man, I don't know. Do I really, really need it?
Mm.
And I do keep it. So we'll see. It's one of those programs, or it's one of those services that... I think if I dropped it, I would miss it more than
you think
I'm enjoying having it right now. Yeah.
Well, part of the thing also is that finally they're adding some value to it. The whole integration with the iLife suite is a nice touch. The ability to back up all of your purchased tracks on iTunes is a nice touch. And when you consider that they went from, I think, 1 gig to 10 gigs overnight, you know, at that point, that was when I kind of said, you know what, I don't feel as bad about having it. And once Leopard came out and the whole back to my Mac, I finally got back to my Mac working, then it was like, okay, you know what, it's finally getting to the point where it's worth it.
So you got back to my Mac working. How'd you get it working?
Honestly, I don't know. I did the 10.5.1 update, started screwing around with the settings on both my G4 iBook and here on my, you know, my 24-inch Intel iMac. And, of course, the only way to really test it is to leave the house and get on some other, you know, some other network and see if you can plug back into it. And I'd gone to get a pizza for the family. I ordered it, and I was sitting outside of the place with the computer. And I said, let's see if there's any open networks. And sure enough, there was. And all of a sudden, under the shared menu, there was my iMac from home. I have no idea what I did differently. You know, I couldn't put it down to one particular thing or another. I started doing it; just started working.
I haven't got it working. I haven't really tried lately. But when I try, you know, I think Apple did something with .Mac to make it work. I really believe, because nobody I heard from when Leopard first came out for the first couple of weeks had that working at all. And then all of a sudden, a whole spat of people are saying, oh, it's working for me now. So I think Apple did something.
Now, you don't have the Airport Extreme, do you?
No.
You got the Spaceship?
Right, but my iMac at home is directly connected to the router, so that shouldn't be a problem. Right.
Well, you wouldn't think so. Wow. It shouldn't be.
And it doesn't matter what type of wireless network you're on remotely.
No, that shouldn't matter at all.
Right. So
unless whatever wireless network you ended up on has got some, you know, some port blocking schemes going on. But I mean, most people who have an open wireless network don't know enough to go into their router settings and do that anyway.
You know, I'm quite surprised walking around with the iPhone in odd places. How many times it pops up, do you want to join this network? Do you want to join that network? That there, how many wireless internet access points are really out there?
But they just,
they're
they
all over the place.
Yeah, they any better. They go ahead and they get their you know, their
Linksys.
ABGN router from, well, either from Linksys or you know, I mean, there's a slew of wireless
but
router
all the ones that I, not all, but the vast majority of these networks that I find is Linksys.
Yeah.
I see, it's always Linksys, it seems. I don't know why, but I guess it's very popular.
And tell me, Tim, how do you know it's a Linksys router?
Because it says, do you want to join Linksys Wireless Access?
Because they didn't change the name, they didn't change the password. You know,
a lot of them are locked down, though. I will give people credit. At least half or more than half of them are password protected, so I can't join without entering a password.
There's certainly more now. Mm-hmm. There's certainly more now that are locked down than, I would say, a year ago.
Yeah, but I also think there's probably twice as many people running a wireless network than they were a year ago.
In my neighborhood. I mean, I used to be the only wireless in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, I get interference from at least three other people that have wirelesses within the range of my house.
Yeah.
I can pop on and look at all three of them, or sometimes up to four or five.
Well, what do you do to deal with the interference?
We have a big microwave ray gun that we shoot.
Well, what I do is I basically go in the wireless menu and then just choose use interference robustness, and that helps.
Well, you might want to consider also changing the channel, whatever channel you've got it on.
Yeah.
Chad's running a Netgear, and it works great. Non-Apple product, but when I come over here with my iPhone, it sees it and joins it, no problem.
Yeah, I had a Netgear B for a while. And then I got a Linksys G, and now I'm on the Airport Extreme.
So what are you looking forward to most at Macworld Expo, Guy? Did you get my email about the price, by the way?
The price of what?
The hotel.
Oh, yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
You can tell me that offline. I just say Guy booked the hotel, so I have to send him money.
Right.
Just write me a check after, you know, at the end of the expo.
No, I won't do that. I'll send you a check before the expo. So, what are you looking forward to the most? Is it visiting
the vendors that you know are going to be there? Is it discovering the new booths, the new companies, or is it the camaraderie of seeing everybody again?
I think it's mostly the camaraderie. I really, really enjoy it when we all get together and you know, just sit around the table and talk about what we're going to be doing that day. And John always has a schedule of – John is the great organizer when it comes –
John Nemirovsky.
Yes. When it comes to dealing with the companies, he seems to have an in for just about – every company that has ever released a Mac product, whether they're still in existence or not. So he pretty much handles that part of it. And, you know, it's a no-brainer. He'll just come up and say, okay, well, let's look at this and this and this and this. And, you know, we go off and do what we got to do.
A lot of what we did last year was video stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we did quite a bit last year. But this year we're going to do even more. We're going to do more podcasting, more video stuff.
Yeah, I think we only did two podcasts.
We did two podcasts. One was like an 8-minute podcast, and the other one was like a half hour.
Yeah.
And they were both good. The audio quality was not the greatest, but this year we're going to do it a little bit better. I'm going to bring a better microphone. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a little handheld, but it's a Phantom Power microphone. Yeah.
Okay, as far as podcasting from like the media room, I'm planning on bringing the Motu Traveler.
Cool.
So I've got XLR ports galore that we can all plug into.
Sounds good.
And it's a single FireWire output. So either using my iBook G4 or your MacBook Pro. Well, we'd have to probably get the drivers for the MacBook Pro.
I will say that I am going, simply because of ProSoft Engineering. They're sponsoring us this year.
Yep.
One of the things that we're definitely going to do is we're going to do a podcast, be video or audio, from their booth once a day. Where we're going to set up. We're going to have kind of a little Apple quiz. It's going to be up on the monitors in their booth. And we're going to give away copies of their software right there on the showroom floor.
Now, do we know where they're going to be?
Yeah, they've got a layout stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
And since they're footing the bill, we'll definitely find out. but it's not going to be just for the people at the show. Obviously, anybody listening to this, if you're going to be at the show, go to the ProSoft Engineering booth, and we will be there eventually. We'll post up on our website the schedule that we're going to be there. So if you want to meet your favorite MyMacker, that's going to be the place to do it. Hopefully we'll get a lot of the staff members to show up at the booth at the same time. But I'm kind of excited to do this. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a little different because Guy and I have actually done these contests once, and you and I have done them, Chad.
Yeah, we did it at the Apple Store in Grand Rapids.
But this is a different audience than you're going to find at the Apple Store. These are true enthusiasts.
Well, and I think one of the things we found with the original Apple quiz, which I take it you will be running, is that... You know, one of the things that Tim and I discussed is when I read through it, I said, Tim, I don't know probably about 2/3 of these. Oh, anybody who's an Apple fan will know these. Anybody who's an Apple fan. So we get there and start running. Everybody's like, eh?
What is it? I don't know. What's the answer?
What's a Newton?
Just take the World of Warcraft prize.
Jobs first name. I don't know that.
I don't know. Jobs, get a? I don't know. I don't think that's going to be a problem at the Macworld Expo.
No.
Technically, your answer isn't correct, Mr. Robertson. I know you're accepting that, but that's not really technically correct. Actually, the first real version of HyperCard came out on... You know,
and it was William Atkinson, not Bill Atkinson. William.
Robert Hazelrig keeps sending out these little emails to people, mostly podcasters.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has this Apple quiz thing that he's kind of excited about, and no one answered the questions the last time he said it.
Oh, no.
I couldn't. Well, he was asking what was the theme music for each one of the releases of OS X, and I saw the question, and I was like, I don't know that.
I saw the question, too, and I was like, I don't care.
I couldn't have figured it out to save my life.
Let's see. No, that's not it. I was trying to look up the Apple Quiz questions that we have posted up on our website. Did you ever read through those, Guy?
No, I don't think I did. I don't even have a link for it.
Okay, no, that's good. Well, I like the fact that you haven't. Because...
I've got it here on my laptop still, I think.
The actual quiz?
Yeah.
Well, it's on our website. Right there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Guy. You ready?
We're going to hit you with the... Bum, 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 bum.
What was the year the first iBook was introduced?
The first iBook was introduced in 1999.
What month?
June?
No, July. Loser.
Oh, come on. That was pretty goddamn close.
Yeah, it was pretty good. What were the two colors it came in?
It was orange and blue.
Well, blueberry and tangerine, but we'll get
to
you.
Oh, come on.
What was the first personal computer that sported a GUI named?
You talking about the first commercially GUI. Released?
Yes.
It was the Lisa.
Very good.
My brother-in-law had one.
What was the date that Apple was officially founded?
Oh, that was, oh, God. July 4th, 1976?
April 1st.
I should have known that.
Yeah,
April Fool's Day.
Yeah, it kind of fits. April Besides Fool's Steve Day. Jobs and Steve Wozniak, who was the third founding member of Apple Computer?
Was that Mark?
No, it wasn't a Mark. You're thinking of Mercola, no? Mercola wasn't a founding.
I don't know.
Ronald Wayne.
Oh, and he was the one that sold all of his stock out because he got chicken shit.
What was the name of the store that the first... What was the name of the store that was the first to order the Apple computer?
Oh.
It's not Megabytes.
No. Byteworks?
It's the Byte Shop.
Byte Shop.
Which is now in the original store is an adult video store in Mountain View, California.
It kind of was back then, too.
Yeah, kind of.
Only adults could buy one.
What was the computer named that Apple introduced on April 19th, 1977?
That was the Apple IIc?
No, just Apple
II. No, Apple II.
What was the name of the first killer app on the Apple II?
The first killer app? Oh, it was...
It was the first killer app of all time, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. It was not a spreadsheet program. It was a database program, wasn't it?
Not really.
It was OmniPro.
No, it was VisiCal.
I knew that. No, VisiCalc.
VisiCalc.
For those who don't know what a killer app means, it basically means it's a piece of software that sells the computer. Rather than buying the computer and then finding software to run, you want this program so much.
You'll buy the computer.
Very rare programs of any sort.
Will sell a platform.
Yeah. The only thing I could really think of is like Grand Theft Auto when it came out. Grand Theft Auto 3 caused people to go buy a PlayStation 2 because they had to play this game. They got me that way.
Well, or Halo.
Halo sold the Xbox. Yeah. Absolutely. What was the name of the commercial that Apple ran during the Super Bowl to first introduce the Macintosh?
Oh, that was the one done by the guy that did Aliens, or Alien.
Mm-hmm.
1984.
Good. You're the man, Guy. Who was the director of that commercial?
Ridley Scott. Yep.
What was the name of the first digital camera Apple sold?
The QuickTake.
Very good.
Was that right?
Yep. Ooh. Besides Apple, which other two companies did Apple partner with in 1994... to create the PowerPC reference platform of computers?
That would be IBM and Motorola.
Very good. See? And Guy's not even cheating, and he's getting these, Chad.
Yeah.
Apple's first effort to replace the aging Mac OS with the next generation OS went by what internal name?
Oh. I don't know.
Copeland.
Yeah, I remember all the magazine articles on it talking about yellow box and blue box, and all it did was give me blue balls. It was awful.
In 1995, Apple tried to break into the video game market with what system? Very good. For 300 points, Guy. In 1997, what company did Apple buy in an effort to create their next generation OS?
Can I phone a friend?
Yes.
I'm kidding. That would be Next Computers.
In 1997, how much money did Microsoft invest
in $150 Apple? Million.
Yeah, that's too
easy. In non-voting stock.
Mm-hmm.
And Chad's laughing because the pictures that he's seeing,
the sexy Billy
photos where he's laying on the desk looking all
gosh, that, you gotta,
weird science oh, sexy.
No, I can't see that.
I look good on the desk. Mm-hmm. What was the name of the computer app introduced in August 1998?
I'm sorry, say that again, please.
What computer did Apple introduce
in August 1998?
I believe that would be the iMac.
Yes.
And that's my final answer.
What was the original color?
The original color was Bondi Blue.
Very good. See, who was the CEO of Apple Computer that Steve Jobs replaced? Oh. And as a hint, here's a hint, guy.
We've had him on the podcast.
The hint is, he's also in my LinkedIn network. Hmm. He is.
Yeah.
God, he was such a nice guy, too, on the podcast. I can't remember his name.
Gilamelio.
Yes.
I wonder how many other Mac journalists out there could say, yeah, I've got an ex-Apple CEO in my LinkedIn network. I do. He joined. I sent him an invite to it because I knew he was on there. And about 3 weeks later, he accepted my invitation. I was like, ooh, I'm the man now. Gil's a really great guy.
Yeah.
I'd like to meet him in person and sit down and have a drink with the guy and chat it up.
I'm guessing he won't be at Macworld.
I wouldn't be surprised if he was, to be honest. I don't think he's very bitter about it. He still loves the platform. He still uses Apple computers. I think he was just, in some respects, in the wrong place at the wrong time, but at the same time, at exactly where he should have been at exactly the right point.
I think it can be said without too much of a shadow of a doubt that he saved Apple, kept Apple going long enough for the products that were in the pipeline, even before Steve Jobs came back, could get out.
Well, you got to realize, and a lot of people want to credit, don't get me wrong, without Steve Jobs, Apple wouldn't be Apple. That being said, if it wasn't, Steve Jobs didn't do the iMac. That came out in 1998. Well, he didn't come back until 1997.
Yeah.
You're telling me that they created, designed, and released this computer in basically 9 months?
No,
I don't think so.
Project Columbia.
Yeah, and that was from Gil Amelio.
Yeah.
Now, didn't Gil also kill that whole Performa, Quadra, Centris?
No, that was still going on, but That was going on its way out, but that officially ended under Steve Jobs, but Gil Amelio was going to trim back the product tree as well. A lot of the stuff that Steve Jobs did in the first couple years of being the CEO at the time was all stuff that Gil Amelio had planned.
He followed through with stuff that Gil had started, basically.
And I don't think enough Mac users that follow it passionately realize that, which I think is unfortunate.
And I can't recall Steve Jobs, or really anyone in Apple, saying a harsh word about Amelio.
No, I think because he's such a nice guy. He's also a very intelligent guy.
Yeah.
And I think the upper management at Apple, they know what he did. And again, I think he was simply the right person at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
But without him, I don't think there would be an Apple today.
Right.
You know, he made some tough decisions.
And, some unpopular decisions.
Very unpopular. But look where we're at now. You know, if we could go back 10 years and look at what Apple was like then, 1998,
Buy the stock.
Buy the stock is right. Are you kidding?
12
of course, 10 years ago, the iMac was released.
Yeah.
I remember driving up to CompUSA, who, by the way, are closing down.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, that was 9 years ago.
It's 2000.
Nine and a half.
Yeah, 9.5 years ago.
Yeah.
Let's just round it up, call it an even decade.
Sure.
I remember driving to CompUSA in Grand Rapids, Michigan to take a look at the new iMac, and I was enamored with it. I just thought it was the most fantastic looking thing. I wanted one so bad. Oh, I wanted one. And you know, one of the things that really stuck out in my head with the new iMac was that it had this USB port. Why that was such a big thing to me, I have no idea. Because when it was released, the only thing that you can get for the USB port was
a floppy
drive. External floppy drive that plugged into it.
I still have one laying around.
Yeah, I know you do. Yeah. It's sitting right there.
There it is. I'm telling you.
But there was something about that USB port that captured my imagination because it was such a simple looking port. You didn't have to force a connector in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You didn't have to screw them in. I mean, it was simple.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't have to worry about chaining stuff and worrying about IDs or...
Yeah, like with SCSI.
Ugh. I've had SCSI nightmares that, you know, I can get two of the three drives to show up. Then I mess around with the switches a little bit. Now I can get, you know, drive one and three, mess around. Now I get two and three.
In the meantime,
I mess around. Now I don't get anything. Oh!
Yeah. In the meantime, number one has reformatted itself without your knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, SCSI was a nightmare.
It was fast, though.
What do you guys think about CompUSA closing down?
I won't miss them.
You gotta think though that as a company, they supported Apple products
right
a lot longer than anybody else did. Including during the dark days when everybody else gave up on Apple.
Mm-hmm.
All the other major computer
retail outlets,
Sears and all those places, Walmart, they all stopped selling Apple products.
Did Walmart ever sell Apple products?
That's where I bought my first Mac.
Yep.
Really?
Yep. CompUSA kept going. They had the Apple store within a store long before Apple opened up retail store number one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that the CompUSA that's closest to my house, which got closed down during the...
last go-around?
Yeah, the first go-around.
The first go-on, so about a year ago?
Yeah, yeah. Every time I would walk through it, all I would see were lots of Macs, some of them running, some of them not running. The ones that were running had lots of files spread out all over the desktop that said, like, K-K-K-K-U-U-U-U-I-I-I-I, you know.
You know,
it's like, God, isn't there anybody here that can just like once or twice a day take a walk through and you know, either get rid of some of this crap or lock down the desktop so that these idiots can't just dump stuff all over the place? And every single time I would go in there, you know, and I can't even tell you how many times seeing somebody that worked at CompUSA talking to somebody saying, oh, well, yeah, you could have a Mac, but for less money, you could have one of these over here. Because the salespeople were getting kickbacks on sales from PC stuff, but not on the Apple stuff. So they weren't pushing it.
Well, yes and no. I think the biggest problem was the utter lack of self-respect that CompUSA seemed to have for itself. It mm-hmm. was always cluttered. It was always messy. Every CompUSA I've ever been in,
yeah,
there's always a lot of stuff, but there was no rhyme or reason why.
Yeah, it was the merchandising was a little bit crazy.
And the floors always seemed dirty.
Yeah.
Wasn't it CompUSA that we went in, Guy, in San Francisco looking for an audio plug?
Yeah.
And that was a horrible store.
Yeah, we couldn't. And every single person we would ask, they'd say, "Oh, yeah, I think it's over there,
over there, or somewhere, maybe."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, can you take us over there and show it to us?
Yeah,
I think
that's downstairs because
just like do your job and you have a customer here looking for something.
You know, Guy, that was actually the first time I've remembered us going into that store. Right now, I forgot all about that until just.
Yeah, I had too.
what were we looking for?
We were looking for a wireless microphone.
No,
that was in Michigan.
Yep. Oh, I know what it was. It was the plug to go from, to resize the headphones.
Oh, yeah, from a quarter to an eighth.
Yeah. That's
what. And they didn't have it.
They didn't have it. You would think something as basic as that. Yeah.
Where, I think we got it at Radio Shack.
Radio Shack, exactly.
Radio Shack for the win!
So, yeah, I don't know that nobody would help us in there. And I've had that experience in almost every CompUSA.
Yeah, they just didn't give a damn.
No, it was very warehouse-ish.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I get paid no matter what
I
do.
What do you need? Yeah, I can ring you up right here, pal. Bring it up. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like if you bought something brand new, the box looked like crap. Like, what, were you stacking refrigerators on this monitor box or what? I mean, it's all crushed and there's water damage over here in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I will say, that the last time I went into one, they actually had my book. So I was like, hey, look at that.
Do you remember the time that you and I were in Grand Rapids, and I think we'd just gone up to the Apple store to talk to them about the podcast, Podcast 100, and we stopped by CompUSA.
They had so much more.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the thing. But I said that, though. I said they had a huge selection, but it was just haphazard.
Well, but also the information. I mean, there was some guy who owned a Mac who was looking for a replacement mouse and wanted the exact same mouse that came with his Mac.
Right.
And well, no accounting for taste.
Well, yeah, and that's and the guy was trying Apple. To sell it was trying to sell it to him, and I think Tim and I said, well, you know, you don't have to use this mouse
right.
with your Mac.
You can get a different any PC mouse.
You can get a 3-button mouse with a scroll wheel. You can get something that actually has some more functionality than the basic Apple mouse, which at that point there was no Mighty Mouse.
And the guy was like, really? Man, didn't he come back showing us a mouse? Would this one work too?
Yeah, he did. He was like, well, does he? Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, that'll work. Take it home. Here you go.
As long as it doesn't have that, what do they call the serial port?
Oh, input? Well, no, we told them any USB mouse would work.
Yeah.
Although, you know, the only difference I've ever really found in mice is the way it feels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I've got a mouse at one of my clients that is the jerkiest piece of crap. If you don't have the cursor speed set all the way to the top, it takes like 8 scrolls to get to the other side of the screen.
It's but not dirty?
No, it's not. It's a brand new mouse. But if you do set it all the way, mm-hmm. if you blink your eyes, you're at the other side of the screen. And you can't stop on one pixel. It will not stop. It's like a car with really bad brakes. It doesn't know. You don't know when it's going to stop. You know eventually it's going to, but it's probably not going to be where you thought it was going to be.
Or even in the same state that you live in.
Yeah. But I guess you kind of get used to it like anything else.
Yeah.
But here's something different. I've talked about for a long time that I've been using the same Logitech mouse for, 5-6 years now.
Mm-hmm.
That
right.
I really like it. One of the things that I consciously wanted to do with the new iMac was to use the Apple Mighty Mouse because everybody slams it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what a piece of crap! It's just junk.
Well, it's not that bad. It's just not that good.
Well, I've been using it now since I've got the new iMac. It's been about a month now, right?
Right.
I'm actually starting to like it. I kind of like that little scroll button thing.
Oh, you are such a suck-up.
I didn't think I would. There is one problem with it. It seems to want to trip over its own cord. The cord that they put on the front of the mouse is just a piece of crap. It doesn't have enough weight, so when you move the mouse, the cord should move with it.
Right.
It's so light that it doesn't move half the time, and it's like I run over the cord. Like, crunch, crunch, crunch. Oh, I just flattened my tires because I ran over the... You know, it doesn't get out of the way, which really kind of sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it doesn't, and it also doesn't stay where I put it. Like a good thick mouse cord,
you leave the room for a second, and you come back, and it's not there.
Well, with the one on the Apple mouse, the Mighty Mouse, I come back and like there's loops in it now that wasn't there a few minutes ago. It's sticking straight up. The cord literally defies gravity.
Mice gremlin.
I hate it. I hate the cord. But other than that, the actual mouse itself, I kind of dig it. It's not bad. I'm used to the second button being over there. My hand realizes now, click here for this button and click here for that.
Mm-hmm.
I did turn off where you have to squeeze it. I had it squeezing it to launch my email program.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize that every time I first grab my mouse, I squeeze it.
Mm.
And it was just enough squeeze...
To open that.
Or I'd be doing something in another program without realizing it. I would squeeze the mouse a little bit and boom, oh, there's my email. Get out of the way.
Julie said that about you.
Yeah, I like to squeeze. So Macworld is going to be in what, about a month from now?
Right, on the 13th. Well, the 13th is when I'm traveling. I guess that's when you're traveling too.
Yeah, that's Sunday.
And that's
right?
A Sunday, yeah.
Yeah.
And then that gives us, you know, I guess Sunday just to kind of cool down and get used to the time zone difference.
Yep.
And then I guess we got all day Monday that is pretty much free.
Yep.
And I we'll probably
I'd
need
I'd really
to talk-
like to meet some of our listeners
mm-hmm.
at Macworld Expo. If there's any kind of way that anybody has any suggestions, even if it's just one person, if you're going to be in San Francisco on Monday and you wouldn't mind coming on the podcast, what do you think, Guy?
Yeah, why not?
You know, even if it's one person that's in San Francisco that listens to the podcast or that's going to be there, if you could be there on Monday, send me an email, tim@mymac.com, and we can arrange a place to meet.
And just meet at the hotel.
We can meet at the hotel.
We haven't said what it is yet, so.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It's going
to
be the...
I don't think we've got such a rabid fan base that someone's going to come.
There's more at the door! There's more at the door! The Holiday Inn Civic Center.
Yep. And that's a nice looking hotel too.
Yeah.
It's about what, 7-8 blocks away from the Moscone Center, but yep, towards the good section of town, not the.
We'll
not
see.
Where you stayed last year?
Well, anything would be better than where you stayed at last year.
Where I stayed at last year was really bad. But you know, I mean, how much was my round trip ticket and the hotel? Was like $400.
Right.
Was that what it was?
Oh, I know.
What, your round trip ticket and hotel was $400?
Yes.
Priceline.com.
No, yeah, it was Travelocity.
Yeah.
It was $400. It was $398. That was 5 days at the hotel and round trip tickets to and from San Francisco from Grand Rapids. Gerald R. Ford Airport.
Right. Been there, done that.
Been there, done that. I know. Yeah. I mean, that, what a price, huh? That's why I couldn't complain too much about the hotel.
True.
I mean, for that price.
That was a steal.
Yeah.
It was, and as long as you had all, you know, when you left the hotel, that all of your stuff was with you.
And there was no little critters following me home.
Yeah.
But no, it was actually pretty clean. It was just.
Will you be my daddy? What?
It was single pane, 12-foot windows that didn't block any sound.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
That seemed to like to shout all the time.
Mm.
That you can hear very well from my seventh floor.
All night long.
It was horrible. And then I lit up a cigarette my first night there. I didn't realize it was no smoking. Mm-hmm. I smoked one cigarette, and I get a call. Are you smoking in your room? Is the fucking wall so thin that... Oh, I just swore in a... Crap. Well, I'm going to have to put the mark down. Is the wall so thin that the smoke literally blew through seven floors down to the
lobby?
So, hi, I'm up on the seventh floor. Someone's smoking up here. I can smell it. I can smell smoke. It's messing up my Linux computer system.
He was real busy shooting up that heroin he'd just gotten, and
That's right. Well, let's jump over to John Nemirovsky's segment, and because I think we're about done.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Kind of a 40 minutes of not really much of anything, huh?
Yeah, yeah. We may have another week of this yet, so.
Yeah, a couple weeks, actually. We've got a month left, really.
Oh, you're right.
Hopefully there'll be more stuff coming up as Macworld gets closer.
True. It might be fun trying to get Chad on one of the podcasts while we're at Macworld.
He's got Skype there, so no reason why he couldn't.
Well, but see, by the time we get around to sitting down to do a podcast, it's like, 1 o'clock in the morning here. Might be a problem.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we can do it from the press room.
Yeah, like we did last year.
Assuming that we actually get press badges.
I'd really like to get more involved with the people who listen to our podcast while we're there in San Francisco. Because if you enjoy listening to the podcast and you want to hang out, we're just Mac users like you.
Yeah.
We'd love to meet some of the people out there and get together and hang out and say hi and
have a beer.
Good time. Absolutely, have a beer. We've met some of our listeners in the past. Rick Stringer became a good friend because of the show. Dan Rodriguez, you remember him?
We had that great time at the 100th podcast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really fantastic to meet the people that listen to the show that never send us email. And yes, we're talking to you directly right now. I know that this person that's listening. I'm trying to pretend that I'm talking to him.
Okay.
Just go along with it.
I'm going.
We know that you're listening. We know that you keep thinking, I'll send an email into that. I like to listen to the show. It's just, these guys just talk and it's kind of fun and I relate to them. You don't email us. We want to know why.
We know where you live.
And if you don't feel like emailing us, you can at least call us and leave us a message on our Skype line.
Which is
1-801-938-5559.
Cool. Okay, let's kick it over to John, and we'll be back next week.
John Nemo from the MyMac.com podcast, using the Eterol R09 portable digital recorder by Roland. The following interview was conducted with Sharon Price in the lobby of a gigantic museum building, and it serves two purposes. Her discussion of Macs and digital photography and digital software in the education environment in high school is interesting, and also the use of this Eterol R09 portable handheld recorder in a large cavernous space with all kinds of background noise going on shows what an incredibly clear and precise recorder this device is. I'm sorry it was cut off at the very end because I didn't have enough space on the SD card inside the Eterol R09. But you get the basic flavor of Sharon's work as an educator teaching high school in Tempe, Arizona, teaching kids how to use digital and film cameras and having both a conventional as well as a digital darkroom. We're here with Sharon Price. Sharon is now an educator teaching in Tempe, Arizona. What are you teaching?
I teach photography and ceramics, public high school level.
Did you choose high school or did it choose
Correct,
you?
I chose high school.
How long had you been away from education or what got you back into it?
Back into education after working for 20 years in the photographic business and the world became more digital than analog. Had a past teaching credentials and decided to try something different.
And what happens when you try to teach digital photography to kids who figure they already know everything about digital photography?
You've got to change a lot of old habits.
But they're not that old to have old habits.
Yeah, it's a lot of bad habits might be the better word for it. Thank you. You're right.
What kind of support do you get from your department and from your school system?
Oh, a good amount of support. We just had an influx of vocational funds that enabled us to buy a large quantity of digital equipment, cameras, printers, computers.
Mm.
Just enabled the lab to have, 30 brand new G5s.
Woo, baby.
And nice brand new computers. And so the kids are extremely lucky to the point where I really don't think the kids know how lucky they really are to have this amount of quality, high-end equipment.
Are the computers set up like in a lab workstation environment, or is each one its own?
We have both. We have one, a computer lab, where the kids are actually learning computer. It's called 2D Computer Arts. And then we also have a dozen computers in the photo room, as well as that room also has the analog black and white dark room. But the rooms now, they're being equipped with the digital equipment, and you're running out of room. So it gets kind of hard. You're kind of squeezed in a little bit.
Are you responsible for maintaining and upgrading the computers that are within your department, or do you have a tech?
We have both. The other teacher I work with, he also, who teaches a lot of the computer classes, he will kind of maintain more of the computer equipment, and I've been doing more of the darkroom equipment, and we kind of share the responsibilities. Mm-hmm. But there is also an IT tech on the campus. But a lot of times what you're going to have is you got the Mac world and the PC world,
yeah.
And ours are all Macs, and then the other gentleman is more PC-oriented. But we kind of take care of it ourselves and load the software on ourselves and keep control of it. But you do have district policies,
mm-hmm.
where they like to keep control of what's going on in the programs and where the kids can go. Like certain websites are blocked and certain things on the computer they don't want the kids to do. Like you mentioned, having to do iChat, that's a new program that came on the computers. They really don't want the kids to have that because they end up chatting with each other as opposed to working on the computers. There's all this, you got to think like a 16, 17-year-old. The kids that teaching digital photography from going to analog is going to be a challenging one because we're just beginning this. We're just getting started this year, really, because we've been teaching at our school with old K-1000s that are older than most of the kids that are taking the courses.
They're as old as some of the parents of these kids.
But two things that I've discovered.
That's a Pentax film camera, for those of you who don't know what Sharon's talking about.
Good question, yeah. And that they're still alive, yeah. And they're made out of metal and not plastic, you know. But a couple things that I've encountered learning from going from film-based, that the kids adapted to the digital cameras, from understanding what all the basic functions are on a film camera, how to use shutter, aperture, mm-hmm. ISO, et cetera, on a manual camera.
Mm.
They adapted well to understanding those features on a digital camera, picked up the digital camera and the features of a digital camera rather quickly. Then you get into the fine-tuning of learning about what you can do with that camera, like the white balance, mm-hmm. and your histogram and other functions. The other thing that you got to curb learning is teaching kids that they can't correct everything that they just shot in Photoshop.
Yes.
Learning how to carefully take a picture as opposed to just, pixels are cheap and I could just keep shooting. Think about what they're shooting like they used to when they're having to use just one 24 exposure roll of film to get all their assignments done.
Now, what about your workflow
or a professional workflow, do you have a strong feeling about Aperture from Apple versus Lightroom from Adobe?
Use Lightroom. Aperture's got too high of a learning curve, and I believe in a high school setting that you really don't need a program like a photo management program, because the kids need to keep control of their own work and their own folders. They don't need an expensive program like Aperture with an very time-consuming learning curve, because you don't have that many. You have too many criteria that you have to meet in a given school year that these kids, part of the curriculum that they have to meet, that there's not time to learn the Aperture. Lightroom is, from personal experience after having tried to learn both of them, Lightroom has got a much shorter learning curve. Mm-hmm. And it's much easier to adapt with, and most people are already using Adobe Photoshop and Bridge, and it marries the two programs marry together very, very well. And I'm coming still from working with CS2 and not CS3
yet.
And I know CS3 and the combination of Lightroom is even a better marriage. But I'm still having to pick up CS3.
But when the kids import their images in, are they going straight to iPhoto? Or do they create identities within Lightroom?
Right now, the kids, the Lightroom is a personal thing that I use. We do not have even Lightroom at the school.
I see. Okay, so you're thinking ahead.
It's a personal thing.
Gotcha.
Photo management program on a high school setting, I don't think it's necessary. The kids are putting their stuff into iPhoto is because they know it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right there on the Apple computers. I haven't quite, all their corrections and their photo manipulation and even their photo editing is being done in Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to teach the kids on how to use Bridge
yes.
and marry those two together. I really don't want to really introduce iPhoto, and I'm not teaching iPhoto. Kids learn iPhoto all on their own.
Yeah.
And it's self-instructing.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.